Let the fun begin. We're glad you made it through our construction zone and made it in here, and things will get very interesting over the next several months, but we're not going to change the things we do. We're not going to change the people we are, and we're just going to find a way. We're just going to find a way. We're glad you're a part of our service today. Open your Bibles, if you will, this morning to the fifth chapter of the Gospel according to Mark. Mark chapter 5. The fifth chapter of Mark is one of those chapters that I think highlights the busyness of Jesus. You read through passages like this, and from dawn to dusk, the Son of God is surrounded by people. He is surrounded by demands. He is surrounded by hurting. He is surrounded by heartbroken. And every day there's always more people to teach and reach. There's always more miracles to work. In the first 19 verses of Mark chapter 5, we won't read it, but He heals a man who has been demon-possessed. Someone obviously everybody knew, probably everybody was afraid of, kept their distance from Him. In fact, verse 5 says, constantly, night and day, He was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing Himself with stones. I see the people late at night and there's a sound coming down from the mountains. And some kid says, "What's that?" And his mama says, "That's that crazy man up there." And everybody stayed away from Him. But Jesus healed him. Verse 20, the man then went out and told everybody what Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed. I'm sure they were. Verse 21, when Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around Him. That happened every day. That happened everywhere He went. And you can't blame these people. They had heard about Jesus. They wanted to see Jesus. They wanted to hear Him for themselves. They were hoping to see another miracle that they had heard about. And many times they did. Verse 22. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up and on seeing him fell at his feet and implored him earnestly saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death." Later on we learn she's 12 years old. "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will be well and live." Verse 24, and he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. So here's Jesus now setting off to heal this little 12-year-old girl. And verse 25, he's interrupted by another person of desperation. A woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and had endured much at the hands of physicians, had spent all she had, was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind Him and touched His cloak. For she thought, "If I just touch His garments, I will get well." And immediately the flow of her blood was dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Here was a woman who had tried everything. She had been to everyone. She's out of money. She's out of options. Jesus was her last hope. And so verse 30, immediately, Jesus, perceiving in Himself the power proceeded from Him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And His disciples said, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And He looked around to see the woman who had done this, and the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before Him and told her the whole truth. And He said, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." There is another miracle. But verse 35 says, while He was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official saying, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore?" But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." Verse 38 says, they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion, people loudly weeping and wailing. And entering in, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." Verse 40, and they began laughing at him. They didn't laugh very long. If you know what happened next, you know they didn't laugh very long. I thought about what to call this lesson, and I just called it Miracles in the Messes. Because everywhere where Jesus went, there tended to be a messy response. It's interesting to see what Jesus did and then look at the reactions of the people. In verse 40 that we just read, they laughed at him. In Mark chapter 6, at the end of verse 3, it says, they took offense at him. So what did Jesus do? Did he get mad? Did he get angry? Did he throw up his hands in disgust? Did he gripe and complain, go into seclusion? No. He worked another miracle. 5,000 people showed up and he fed every one of them. You know, as you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it is so easy to focus on the miracles that you miss the messes of the people who came to Jesus. And you miss the messes of the responses to Jesus. The mess of their laughing at Him. The mess of their being offended at Him. The mess of their misunderstanding Him. Jesus dealt with a lot of people. And a lot of messes. So he is surrounded by the masses of people and the messes they brought with them. And time after again, and time and again, he rose above all of that. In the midst of the laughter and the ridicule and the rejection and the constant demandingness upon his time, he never gave up. He never stopped. And you think, why? Why did he just keep going? And we've already been reminded of that today. The reason is you and me. Look at the messy 12. Mark 6, verse 45. Mark 6 and verse 45. Even the 12 were messy. Mark 6, 45. Immediately Jesus made His disciples get into the boat and go ahead of Him to the other side to Bethsaida, while He Himself was sending the crowd away. And bidding them farewell, He left for the mountain to pray. When it was evening, the boat was in the middle of the sea, and he was alone on the land. Verse 48, seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them. So get the scene in your mind. Jesus is praying on the mountain. But from His vantage point, at higher elevation, He could look out across the Sea of Galilee and He could see the 12 struggling in the mess of the storm. And the waves were not just sort of ebbing and flowing and lapping against the sides of the boat. The waves were exploding all around them. You remember when you were a kid? And you got one of those root beer floats or Coke floats. Remember that? And had a straw, and you're sitting in the back seat of the car, and you found out that if you blew into the straw, that it would create all of these wonderful bubbles. And the harder you blew, the bigger the bubbles. And the bubbles got so big as you blew into the straw that it just exploded all over the place. And then you remember how you got in trouble? Remember? I don't know why I thought about that, but I thought about this when I'm thinking about this scene with the disciples. Because these waves were just bubbling up and exploding all around them. It's messy. It's hopeless. They're feeling very helpless. And so Jesus looks and sees this, and knows that he must go to them. And so he does. He doesn't bother finding a boat. He doesn't bother just jumping in and swimming. Verse 48 says, he came to them walking on the sea. I don't think you can do that. Another miracle. Another miracle. And you know what happened? They missed it. They missed it. Verse 49. When they saw him walking on the sea, they supposed it was a ghost. And they cried out. For they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke with them and said, take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid. And he got into the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were utterly astonished. For they noticed this. For they had not gained any insight from the incident of the loaves. For their heart was hardened. You see that word hardened? You know what that means? It means somebody who is unresponsive. Somebody who's lacking in sensitivity, lacking in perception. Now, how can that be? These men have been with Jesus from the very beginning. They not only have seen the miracles, they had front row seats. And so how could these 12 men be hardened? How could they lack the sensitivity and perception that they lack? The same way we do. They lack the sensitivity and perception the same way we do. They had seen it all. They had heard it all. But they had never applied any of it personally to themselves. They had access to Jesus without application to them. And isn't that what we do? Don't we do the same? Don't we allow sometimes the distracting messes that surround our lives to obscure the very presence and person and power of God who can help us if we would just see? I mean, we go to Bible class, for example, and we listen carefully, and we get out our notes, and we write stuff down, and we take notes, we scribble stuff down to remember, and we want to make sure we have all the right answers. Tracy and I were talking the other night coming back from Georgia on Wednesday night, and I said, remember years ago when everybody had those workbooks that all fill in the blanks? I mean, it's just nothing but fill in the blanks. And you sit at home, you fill in all these blanks, and you come to class, and you count. And you think, okay, I'm the ninth person. Because the teacher always said, okay, Joe, you take number one, and then Jim, you take number two. And so we would all count, and I'd look at that, and I'd go, oh, okay, I'm number nine. So I'd make sure I had the ninth blank filled in. And then lo and behold, Bob, who was number seven, says, well, I wasn't here last Sunday. You might as well skip me. It blows the whole thing. Because we want to make sure we got all the right answers to all the questions. But what good does that do if we don't internalize that and personalize that and there's no change? Here it is. Information without application will never lead to transformation. Never. Not going to happen. In other words, what good does it do to know, that is, have the information, if we do not live the application? And that's where they missed it. That's where we miss it. So I have to ask you this morning, has your mess caused you to miss Him like they did? Jesus miraculously heals a demon-possessed man. Jesus miraculously heals a woman who's been sick for 12 years. Jesus miraculously raises a 12-year-old little girl from the dead. Jesus miraculously feeds 5,000 people. Jesus miraculously walks on the water. And they saw it all. And they didn't get it. So close. So far. But I want you to look closely at verse 50. There is a word in verse 50 that I think ties all of this together. It's the word terrified. Terrified. The word terrified is from a Greek word meaning to set in motion what should remain still. Let me say that again. It is a word meaning to set in motion what ought to remain still. Think about that. The miracle in the middle of their mess, the storm, was walking right toward them. The one who could hush the storm and calm the waves, the one who had shown them time and time again His power, the one who has proven His love, proven His compassion, proven His devotion to their well-being, and they missed Him. Why? Because they were terrified. Because they had set in motion what should have remained still. They had allowed the storm, they had allowed the mess to obscure the very one who could bring them peace. We read moments ago in Philippians chapter 6, or Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God shall guard your heart. Worry about nothing. Pray about everything. Peace. Psalm 46 and verse 10. Be still. And know that I am God. You know, there's another word for mess. And in our vernacular, the word is drama. Drama. There's some people whose lives are just, it seems like, constantly filled with drama. Now, some messes, some drama is unavoidable. When you're dealing with sick children, when you're dealing with aging parents, when you're dealing with the daily work issues, when you're dealing a lot of times with the day-to-day stuff of life, you can't avoid those things. That's just part of life. But if we're not careful, some of our messes could be avoided if we didn't set in motion what should remain still. And so people come along and they trade the truths of God for what they think is a better way. What are they doing? They're setting in motion what they need to remain still. Or we buy Satan's lie and we give in to temptation and we set in motion what should have remained still. Or we take our schedule and we cram our schedule full of extracurricular activities when the curricular is already full. What have we done? We've set in motion what should have remained still. Or we think our life is going to be better. If I just had a little bit more of what everybody else has, we're setting in motion what ought to remain still. Just like them. Except their mess was a storm. And they're straining at the oars. And they're fighting the storm. And they're surrounded by the wind and the wave of drama. And they look up and they say, "Boy, here comes somebody walking on the water. I wonder who that could be." Yeah, I wonder who that could be. And they miss the very one who could give them peace. Why? Because they set in motion what should have remained still. So as we wrap up our thoughts this morning, verse 50, what does Jesus do? He turns to them and He says, "Do not be afraid."
Do not be afraid. Guess what he would say to you? Guess what he would say to you?
Regardless of the mess that is surrounding your life, regardless of the drama, regardless of the storm, he would say the same thing. Do not be afraid. And it is interesting, Jesus didn't run away from their mess. He ran to them. And he helped them solve it. In fact, he climbed up into the boat with them. And he's not going to run away from your mess either. And if you let him, he'll climb into your boat too. And when you let Jesus into the boat, an amazing thing happens. The storms tend to lessen. The mess gets less messy. The drama is not so dramatizing. Because Jesus has a way of causing you to remain still. Be still, said the psalmist, and know that I am God. Don't keep setting in motion things that need to remain still. Glenda Shales wrote in our supplement, number 129, this song. Go ahead and get your supplements out. 129. Listen to these words. Be still and know that I am God. Be still, my child, be still. For I created all of them. Be still, my child, be still. Be still and know that I am God. Be still, my child, be still. Exalt my name above the earth. Be still, my child. Be still. Be still and know that I am God. Be still. My child, be still. For I am watching over you. Be still, my child. Be still. You know what happens when we offer the invitation? We're not still because everybody has to get up. So everybody get up. Everybody stand up. Right now. Everybody stand up. We're going to sing this song for the invitation. It's not usually an invitation song, but I'll tell you, I think it'll have an effect this morning as we think about the things we've talked about from Mark chapter 5 and 6. Because God is asking all of us to be still. But how can you be still if you don't know Him? If you haven't obeyed the gospel? If you're not a Christian, we invite you to come and be baptized for the remission of your sins. If you are a Christian and haven't lived right, we're asking and seeing if you come home and come back. Because until you do that, you're still fighting against Him. You're setting in motion what ought to remain still. And there's no need for that. This is a song to sing softly. This is a song to sing with great reverence. Let's sing it together.